actually finish, or I hope so, because it would be a bit funny to leave it in the middle. Today we are up to the last paragraph of the Shemayna Esrei. As we said, really this is not considered the Shemayna Esrei anymore, but it is the last paragraph that we say with our feet together in the Shemayna Esrei experience. So what is this paragraph if it's not part of the Shemayna Esrei, and yet we're still standing with our feet together? So I'll just show you where the source of this paragraph comes from, the Gemara. And the idea is as follows. You know that the Anshei Knesset HaGdolah, the men of the Great Assembly, during the time just after the Purim story, actually, they established the specific nusach, the specific way we daven, the wording of the Shemayna Esrei. Before that, it was more spontaneous. People would daven every day, but it was in a more spontaneous way. And we know that davening is a service of the heart. That's what davening is called. Therefore, there always has to remain an element of the communication that we have with Hashem that is our own communication. Therefore, like I'll read you, the Mishnah says like this, Ha'aseh tefilasei keva, somebody who makes his prayers fixed, which means it's not genuine supplication, it's a problem. So what did the Chachamim do? And they ask, what does it mean that the tefillah becomes fixed? So some people say when somebody davens and it's like a burden. Some people say if somebody davens and they don't daven in a way of tachanunim, where they're really beseeching. Another explanation is anyone who is unable to innovate something, to introduce a new request into his prayer. So what happens is that there's a place in the Gemara Brachas which goes into actually 11 different tzaddikim who, at the time, who said, what did they do when they finished the prescribed Shemayna Esrei? They would add a specific paragraph that they wrote for themselves. And it seems that once they wrote it for themselves, once they came up with it, they would say that same paragraph every day. So there's 11 different versions. And I'll just read you one. So he says, the Gemara now cites examples of personal prayers that righteous men appended to their Shemayna Esrei recitals. So the first one they give the example is Rebbe Lazar. When he would complete his Shemayna Esrei, he would say, and I'll just read you his paragraph, and then we're not going to read all 11. We won't have time, but they're actually quite fascinating. But he used to add, may it be your will, Hashem, our God, that you cause to dwell in our lot love, brotherhood, peace, and companionship, and enlarge our boundaries with students, and cause our end to prosper with a future and a hope, and set our portion in the Garden of Eden, and establish with us a good companion and a good inclination in your world. And may we rise every morning and find that the yearning of our heart is to fear your name, and may your needs and their fulfillment come before you for the good. This was his. And there's 11, as I say. Now, ours, the one that we have, Elekai Nitzar, the one that actually has been added to our Siddur, is one of these 11 paragraphs. And this was said by Mar, the son of Ravina. For some reason, we don't know exactly why, but the authors of the Siddur, so to speak, chose the one of Mar, the son of Ravina, to be the paragraph that we add to the Shemayna Esrei, and it is considered our own supplication, even though he wrote it, and it shows this feeling where we add something personal, something of our own, so that our davening is not just a rote davening where we read something that doesn't mean anything to us. I just want to read you, this is somebody called a very great Mefarish, the Tzlach, who explains the Gemara, and I just want to read you, this is a translation, and he says it very beautifully, just for us to understand. Prayer is an experience that leaves a strong impact on the soul, right? We've just gone through the 19 brachas of the Shemayna Esrei, right? And as we've explained, this is not just talking, reading, saying, this is an experience of connecting to Hashem. When one recites the Amidah properly, with intense feeling and devotion, he concludes this intimate encounter in a spirit of ecstasy that elevates his soul. Before the men of the Great Assembly composed the uniform text of the Amidah, prayer was a spontaneous personal outpouring of the heart. Even after they introduced a standard prayer text, Their purpose was not to stifle spontaneity, but to inspire it. Every blessing of the Amida ignites a spark in the soul. And when all the blessings are completed, the soul is aflame with passionate love for Hashem. The tongue has been freed. The heart has been opened. Now is the time for the soul to overflow with personal petitions and praises. And in truth, this is the time. Remember, we've mentioned a few times we had the paragraph of Shema Kaleinu, and that was a time that we were told that we can, if we have something specific, we can add. The truth is that in this paragraph of Elokein Netzar, this is really, and we'll see at which point, we can really add anything that has not... You know, some of the brachos in Shemayna Esrei ask for specific things, like for somebody to be healed, for us to have parnasa, for us to be gathered in gathering of the exiles, Mashiach, all the different things. And the truth is, when we say them, when we have our own personal, so to speak, feeling for that, that's we think about that while we're saying those brachos. So first of all, there are certain things that might not be mentioned in Shemayna Esrei, certain personal needs that we might have that are not explicitly stated. So now is the time when we can think about those and we can actually express that in this paragraph. So it's at one point in this paragraph that you can put your own requests in, but this is a paragraph which also shows, and this is a tremendous thing, that we have standing in front of Hashem, we're almost like in the Holy of Holies, in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. We don't want to leave. We're hesitant to leave this incredible unity, this incredible encounter with Hashem. And therefore, it's like, you know, when you have, you've met somebody so, so special, and you know that they have such special power, you obviously, you can't even stop, and you, like, your final few words that come out of you from the depths of your heart. And then after this paragraph, that's when we take three steps back. It's like leaving the Kodesh HaKadoshim, and each step is like going back to a different part of the Beis HaMikdash, right, into the Holy, and then into the to the actual Azara, and then into the Chatzar, into the courtyard, and then we are actually leaving, so to speak, the presence of Hashem. But coming into this paragraph, now, just want to tell you like this, so this paragraph, Elokein Netzar, is almost the same. There's different nusachs, right? So there's the nusach, as we said, the nusach Ari and the nusach Ashkenaz is the ones that we're basically using. There is a slight difference. Basically, it's just in the order, and there's maybe just one, like three words extra in the nusach Ari. And there's just, we'll see, there's one sentence that is in a different order when we get into it. But basically, it's the same. Now, let's understand what this special one that Mar added, what was his request, the personal request, and this was chosen to be the one that was felt that we can all relate to and that we all need. So what, the first word, what does it begin? Elokai. What does Elokai mean? Elokai means my God. The truth is that's not, some people call this paragraph Netzar. Elokai is more like an introductory word. My God. What is my God? Because as we said, this is the personal. So it's our personal God. We are addressing Hashem as our personal Hashem. And the commentaries tell us that at this point, what we feel is, and especially after we've gone through the whole experience of Shemayna Esrei, we feel that we are totally in the hands of Hashem, totally dependent on Hashem. Anything that we have, any kayach, any ability, only comes because Hashem gives it to us. Not only because Hashem gave it to us when we were born, but because He's constantly bestowing us with this ability and the strength to do whatever we're doing. We have no strength on our own. Now, if that's the case, what it evokes in us is a feeling to cry out to Him, well, then we need your help for many things that we find challenging, because we don't have strength unless you give us strength. So that's why we start Elokai. And the first thing that we know we're going to say is Netzar. In a minute, I'll discuss the Netzar L'Shoini Meira. What's the first request that we're asking Hashem that we say we need help with is to watch our tongue, right? To be very careful with how we speak, right? As we say, guard my tongue from evil and my lips from speaking deceitfully, right? That's the first thing we ask for. Interesting of all things that, in a minute we'll see why. But before we even get to the details of why, it's very, very interesting. So we realize that we're totally dependent on Hashem, and any challenge that we will be facing through the day, we cannot do it on our own. We need Hashem's help, and we are confident that when we ask Hashem, He will help us. So there's a very cute mashal that the Chafetz Chaim gives. He gives an analogy where a person, for example, with this request, a person asks Hashem to help us that we should guard our tongue from speaking evil and that we shouldn't speak deceitfully. And then what happens? We close the siddur and we know what happens. We meet somebody and something comes out of our mouth that shouldn't come out of our mouth. So a person could think, well, my davening was for nothing. So he gives a very interesting analogy. And he says like this, imagine if somebody needed a loan. He's a poor man, he needs a loan. He meets a friend who he knows has money and can lend him the money. He says to his friend, he explains his plight and he needs a loan. And the friend says, sure, no problem. Come to me in my office and we'll arrange it, no problem. Well, days go by. And the guy just doesn't show up in the friend's office. Well, he meets him a few weeks later. He says, hey, you never gave me the loan. So the guy says, but you never came to the office. All I said, I'm ready to give it to you. I only asked you to just come to the office so that we can actually practically arrange it. So the Chafetz Chaim says, if we say these words, and then after we close our siddur, we go and mix with the wrong people. We go and involve ourselves and think the wrong things. We don't put any effort at all into guarding our tongue, well, then the tefillah is for nothing. So yes, we ask Hashem, and we know that it's only through Hashem's strength that we will be able to withstand this test. But we also obviously have to put in the right effort to put ourselves in the right environment, with the right people, with the right strength, learning the right things so that we can actually help Hashem to fulfill this request that we are asking of Him. Okay. Now, also just to, before we go specifically why this request first, I want to share one more thing. Okay, so we say like this, that we're asking, what are we asking Hashem? So we say that we're asking Hashem, Elokai, we say before we ask Him that you are my God. What does my God mean? As we said, we know that everything comes from Hashem, all our strengths come from Hashem. But even more than that, what we're acknowledging is that what is truly our identity? Our identity is our neshama, which Hashem gives us, which means that we are so fortunate that Hashem chooses to rest His Shechina within us, right? He gives us a neshama, a part of Himself, and we actually contain that. That's us. We contain a part of Hashem. When a person acknowledges and recognizes and is aware that he is so lucky to have a part of Hashem in him, what that does, so that's why we say Elokai, my God, what that does is immediately it actually affects our way of thinking, speaking, and action, because we don't want to do anything that will make Hashem uncomfortable in the environment that we are creating for Him. If Hashem is willing and is so kind and is going to come and stay with us and live in our home, so to speak, live within us, well, then we want to create our environment that it should be a welcoming place for Hashem, which means we want to live in sync with what Hashem wants in a holy way. So one of the first things that we know is that if we acknowledge that Hashem lives within us, right? Hashem chooses us and He loves us and therefore He gives us a part of Himself. What does that mean? That means that we are like a child to Hashem. And if we're like a child to Hashem, then we look at our friends and he's also like a child to Hashem. And as we've mentioned many times, we know that what does a parent want most? They want and they're very happy when somebody else treats their child with respect and dignity. If you treat somebody else's child not with respect and not with dignity, that is very upsetting for the parents. So therefore, not only will it make sure that we will live our life in a holy way, but it will also ensure that when we look at our friends, the way we treat the people around us, we will treat them with dignity, because we know that that would bother Hashem the most if we don't treat them with dignity. So again, that's what it leads also immediately, as soon as we become aware that Hashem is within us. And obviously also what it leads to is that we try our hardest, we like feel so strongly that we will do nothing that will make Hashem uncomfortable and want to leave. Because Hashem is Elokai, we want Him to stay with us. So we'll be the best hosts possible that Hashem should feel comfortable and want to stay with us. And on the flip side, we'll do nothing that will upset Him, that will make Him want to leave. So that's why we start with Elokai. Now, interestingly, there's a very beautiful, we don't have time now, but there's a very beautiful song. It's all over the internet. It was very popular a little while ago. It's a song which was actually, the words are written by the Apter Rav. He was known, a very great tzaddik. And it's quite a long song with Hebrew words. There are some people that sing it also in English. Ribayin ha'ilamim yadati ki hinni biyot chalava. This song is a song which displays our recognition, it's not just like our internal really knowing that we are totally in the hands of Hashem. And in that, in the words, what he puts there is very, very strongly, he says that we know that we are in your hands like the clay is in the hands of the, I don't know what you call it, the person who's forming all of the different, the potter, you know, the one who's making the pottery. And anybody who wants to harm us or help us cannot do that without you, Hashem. This is what we are saying when we say Elokai. We are giving ourselves over to acknowledge in a very deep way that we are totally in the hands of Hashem. And nobody and nothing, and there's absolutely zero in the world that can, as we say, harm us or benefit us if Hashem doesn't want. In other words, everything is really an agent from Hashem to help us, or if God forbid, to harm us, but it's all by the will of Hashem. So therefore, we acknowledge that very, very strongly. And then we come, as we said, what's our first request after we say that Hashem is our personal God, that we are totally dependent on Him? And we ask Hashem to guard my tongue from evil and my lips from speaking deceitfully. Why this? So first of all, as we said before, because this is the idea that if Hashem is our God and the God of all of the Jewish people, as we say, and we are all brothers, obviously what Hashem detests most is if we talk negatively about each other. So this is just on a simple level. A little bit of a deeper level, we know, David HaMelech says in Tehillim, Mi ha'isha chafetz chayim, right? Who is the man who wants life? Oyev shalom, what does he do? Nitzar l'shoin chameira. What does he have to do? And it's actually the same words here, right? Nitzar l'shoin cha. So here we say, Nitzar l'shoini. Nitzar l'shoin cha means, David HaMelech says, if you want life, if you want to choose life, guard your tongue from speaking evil. Here we're talking to ourselves. We're asking Hashem to help us guard our tongue from evil. Why? Because it says in the Gemara a very interesting thing, actually, and this is explanation is given by the Vilna Gaon. He says like this, that we know that there are cardinal things that we can do that can separate us from Hashem, like the major ones. So we know generally we say that there are three categories. This is serving idols, murder, and adultery. But what people don't realize is equivalent and inclusive, and so to speak, more than all of those three, is Lashon Hara. That's what it says. Lashon Hara is above all of those three. It's the worst of all. That's the fourth one, that's the worst of all. And that's why we say over here, what we ask Hashem is for help to guard our tongue, because this is the worst thing that a person could do. Okay, so that's the first thing we ask. So first of all, we have to recognize, Take, that it's something so bad, but we ask Hashem to help us because it's not a simple thing. And we say, why is it not so simple? So it's explained that, you know, when we want to do something, so usually there's like a whole process, you know, you think about it, and you have to want it, you have to see it, you have to have the ability, and then you decide, and then maybe you do it. When it comes to speaking, for some reason, the tongue, and actually there's a language that says the tongue is like the kulmus halev, it's like the pen of the heart. And for some reason, the tongue seems to be more spontaneous and much quicker acting than any other part of our body. And as soon as a person has a feeling, sometimes there's no filter and it goes straight to the tongue. And that's why, because it is in a sense almost like such a loose cannon, we need extra protection, that Hashem should help us, that we should be able to control what comes out of our mouth. And then we actually go on and we say not only what comes out of our mouth, but we ask Hashem, so we shouldn't speak, as we say, evil, and also our lips from speaking deceitfully. What's the difference between evil and deceitfully? So evil is like totally bad, you know, you're talking something, whether it be a lie about somebody, something very, very negative. But deceitfully, in a certain way, in some ways, is even worse, because deceit means that you act in one way externally, but then at the same time, you can be doing something totally the opposite. On the one hand, look like you're helping the person, and on the other hand, you can literally be stabbing him in the back. And it says this is really, really bad. So what we want is that sometimes if we do speak Lashon Hara, what it leads to is that afterwards, to cover ourselves up, we have to speak deceitfully. First of all, we have to lie that we didn't say the Lashon Hara. Or sometimes it's even different. Sometimes we speak something negative about somebody else, and then we have to say something positive, which is also not true. So it leads to a lot of deceit. And then something very, very beautiful that's explained is that what happens when a person engages in this conduct, we know that Hashem mirrors how we act. So when we act in a deceitful way, when we act with this type of behavior, then what Hashem does is we all have we have Malachim with us, hopefully to help us, but we also have the Yetzirah, right? That's part of our challenge. And what Hashem does then is He makes our Yetzirah act the way we are acting, which means in a deceitful way. What does that mean? It means that what the Yetzirah will do is He will tell you that something is kosher or something is correct when it is incorrect. The Yetzirah will deal with you in a deceitful way. And when that happens, it's extremely difficult for you to know what the right thing to do is, because everything is being deceitful to you. And that's what happens when you engage in deceit, then you receive this deceitful behavior back from your own Yetzirah. And that's very complicated, because then you don't even know you're doing something wrong, and you won't ever even do tshuva. You're never going to change for the good, because you don't even know that it's something bad. And obviously the idea over here is also that we shouldn't be hypocritical. We shouldn't be, like the term is used, echad bepev, echad belev, with, you know, one thing in our mouth and another thing in our heart. That's what we ask for. So we can see that the first thing that we ask Hashem for help, because it seems to be one of the most challenging things for us to control, is that we should speak properly. We shouldn't speak Lashon Hara, but we shouldn't speak negatively. We should use our tongue in the right way, and we shouldn't be deceitful. And then we go on and we say, Ul mekallai nafshi sidaim, to those who curse me, let my soul be silent. This is a very strong language. What does this mean? To those who curse me, let my soul be silent. So we say, it's actually also a very powerful thing that's written in the Gemara, that there's a very tremendous attribute in a person that a person can work towards, and that is that he should be able to receive curses, which means to receive insults, the Gemara says, and not respond. Not actually, never, not definitely not give back any curses or any insults, and not respond at all. And this is what we ask Hashem. We ask Hashem that we should be able to be somebody who, if somebody says something negative to us, we will not respond. My soul will be silent to those who curse me. Now, why do we use the word soul? What's the soul here? Because we're asking not just that we should be silent externally, that we shouldn't respond with our mouth, but even inside, we shouldn't feel insulted. We shouldn't bear a grudge. When they say it, it shouldn't even, so to speak, come in at all. And we definitely shouldn't carry it with us further. We know this is actually, just very quickly, because we don't have that much time, but this actually is so connected to the Purim story. I just mentioned it yesterday, because the only reason that Mordechai and Esther actually came into the world was because David HaMelech exhibited this behavior. When he was cursed, Shimi ben Gera cursed him, and David HaMelech said, do not do anything to Shimi. He did not respond with anything, never mind anything bad. He did not allow Shimi to have anything bad done to him. In other words, people wanted to kill Shimi because he cursed the king. Who came from Shimi? Mordechai and Esther. both descended from Shimi, which means because David HaMelech had the ability to accept, so to speak, an insult. And it says what David HaMelech thought in his mind was, it's not Shimi who's cursing me, it's Hashem who's telling him to curse. You think Shimi has power on his own, as we just started off at the beginning, Elokai? It's all from Hashem. For some reason, I'm meant to hear it. I'll have to work out why and what I'm going to do with it. But it has nothing to do with the person who's saying it. And therefore, you become, so to speak, silent in that sense. There is no grudge. There's no hurt carried around in your heart. It's absolutely silent. So that's what these are things that we're asking Hashem to give us the strength to work towards slowly, slowly, slowly. And we say also that a person who exhibits this kind of behavior, actually Hashem forgives them. It says somebody who has the humility to be insulted and not insult back, actually is forgiven for all their sins. That's what it says. It's actually a tremendous, it's considered a very, very tremendous milah. There was, I forgot, one of the great gedolim used to send people, said, you know, some people who needed a bracha for something, he said, find somebody who has been insulted and didn't respond, and if they give you a bracha, their bracha is worth a tremendous amount. So there is something very, very special that it does to a person when they work on this midah, when they're able to accomplish this. Okay, then, let me just see, and then we go on and we say, V'nafshi ka'afar l'kolti. And this all goes in the same, it's along the same theme. Let my soul be silent to those who curse me, and then let my soul be as dust to all. What does my soul be as dust? So on a simple level, it means this deep humility, right? That my soul is like dust. In other words, I don't consider myself so important. I don't take myself so seriously, so to speak, that if somebody says something to me, I have to respond, or I have to feel slighted, or if somebody does something which maybe is not as respectful perhaps as it should be, I don't get so offended. I don't get so hurt because I'm just like dust. That's one thing. But there's a lot more than that. Let's see with the dust. So he explains like this. First of all, V'nafshi ka'afra l'koltia. Perhaps we can even take it on a whole different level. What does it mean, ka'afar? That my soul should be like dust? It means that my children, this is what the Mefarshim say, my children should live forever like dust. So that's a whole different explanation. Nothing to do with humility, but just like dust is forever, it never ceases to exist, so too I and my children and my descendants should live forever and live forever connected to Hashem. So that's one thing we have in mind also over here. And then also interesting that we accept insults like dust. As we're talking about the concept of humility, everybody steps on dust, right? Everybody steps on it, and yet it just, whatever, it allows everybody to step on it. So too, this is the level of humility that we can work on. Obviously, we don't, okay, there's a whole different discussion about being a doormat, but the idea over here is that we don't take ourselves so, so seriously, and we don't worry. And it's interesting, because a fascinating thing it says, that people step on dust all their life, and then when we pass away, we go under the dust. The dust covers us. So you think that you're being stepped on, but the truth is, sometimes it's the people that we're stepping on that at the end, they're the ones who are much more superior. So in other words, leave it to Hashem. He will take care of it. He will ensure that you should be able to be where you are and in what position you need to be. Another very interesting thing with this is because before we were talking about if people insult us, so we don't respond and we don't even bear the grudge, we don't carry it in our heart, and here we're even taking it a step further. That we don't bear it a grudge, but we also don't want anything bad to happen to these people. What does that have to do with dust? Because if you think about it, we all step on dust, we step on the earth, and yet, when we want to eat, what does a human being do? Takes a seed, puts it into the ground, and out grows a tree, out grows fruits, vegetables, whatever we need, wheat. So the dust, the earth, gives forth everything that we need to sustain ourselves, even though we step on it. So what we're asking for, we ask a very beautiful thing. We say that we should learn from the earth, that even if we are being stepped on, we should actually give forth blessings to others. We should not want bad for anybody else. And interestingly, we say that if we do that, as we said before, Hashem mirrors. So if we do that, then if we sometimes unintentionally behave that way to certain mitzvahs or to certain Torah or to certain things that Hashem wants, in other words, we trample on things that are really important, maybe we don't realize and we're trampling on it, well, Hashem will overlook it. And nevertheless, despite that we're trampling on things that we shouldn't be trampling on, what Hashem will do is Hashem will allow us to grow, good things to come from us. In other words, that just like the earth being trampled gives forth the fruits. So it's a good thing to do, so to speak. It will only benefit us at the end. Another interesting thing that it says, "V'nafshi ka'afer l'kol tiyeh," what that means is not that other people should treat us as dust. Rather, let other people not think about us at all. That's what we want. We don't want to arouse the jealousy of others. Let other people not look at us in any way special or anything. Just as normal, so to speak. We don't want to arouse any jealousy from anybody else. And the one other thing that I saw that was a really beautiful explanation, it says, very, very beautiful, and it says it's from a Maimer of the Alter Rebbe, but I didn't see it inside, but this Sefer brings it a very beautiful thought, that when we are growing spiritually, so sometimes we're lucky, and things are very inspiring, and we're in an inspired state. But sometimes we do fall into, whether it be a mood or a state of being, which is like dust, where things don't have any taste, we're not inspired, we're flat, we're down. So we ask Hashem, "V'nafshi ka'afar l'kol tiyah," that even when everything tastes like dust, even when we're not inspired, please give us the strength to continue serving you. Give us the strength to continue to daven. And in davening, it's especially applicable because sometimes davening is such a hard thing and our minds could be wandering and we could be worried about many, many things. So we ask Hashem that even if it is like dust almost, but just give us the strength to continue. And hopefully what will happen, just like from the earth blossoms forth, it will blossom forth, even if at the moment it just feels like dry earth. Okay, and as we said, just that also simply we're asking Hashem that we should remain humble, even after, and it's also interesting, sometimes when a person is, whatever, maybe a certain stage in their life or a certain age, and you've given a lot, perhaps you've given a lot to a specific person, and you've helped them, and they're not reciprocating, a person can start to get a little bit frustrated. So here we say that a person shouldn't feel frustrated, he should remain humble, and not feel bad, even if he's being treated as dust, it's okay. Hashem knows what you are doing, and even if you have given so much, continue to give, as we say, and not to feel disappointed in that sense that you've given and nobody's even recognized it. Another thing also is, as we said before, that dust is forever. As we said, we want our descendants to be forever, but also we should remain unchanged as dust. And what are we talking about? Obviously, that our godly soul, that our real holiness, that really is what we are internally, that should also be like dust, which doesn't change. So we should remain steady and consistent in our connection to Hashem. Okay. And one more thing before we go further. We also say interesting thing that what does the earth do? It receives the seed and then it gives forth the fruits or the whatever it gives forth. So too, what it teaches us is that we should look around us and all the people that we have to do with and that we encounter. Sometimes we might look at them as just ordinary people, but what we should try to see is that they are just like the earth and we are just like the earth, which means that if we can learn something from everybody. Where our encounter with anybody that we meet can inspire us to grow so that even if, like, let's say, for example, we're the earth, and they're like a seed, which when we plant it in our earth, it can blossom forth. So we look at other people as an opportunity to learn something from them, just like the earth that absorbs the seeds and then sprouts forth fruits. Okay. Okay. Then, and just one more thing. Okay, so then we go on and we say, obviously, lakol tia, that we should feel this to everybody. It should be whether it be an adult or a child, whether it be a wealthy person or a poor person, a very intelligent person or not such an intelligent person. We should feel humble and ready to learn and ready to gain and ready to give to everybody. Lakol tia, to everybody. Everybody equally, whoever they are. And then we say, Psach libi b'seira secha, right? Open my heart to your Torah, u'b'mitzvei secha tirdoif nafshi, and let my soul eagerly pursue your commandments. This is interesting, because until now we were talking about like speaking correctly and having the humility when we deal with other people, and now we are asking for something else. Now we're asking Hashem to open our hearts in Torah, that we should be able to learn Torah, to be able to understand Hashem's Torah. It's interesting that as a prerequisite for learning Torah, he gives first the concept of humility. Many people would think that humility doesn't go so well with an intellectual pursuit, right? If somebody wants to understand Torah, Torah is a very deep knowledge and a lot of complex things that you have to learn. Perhaps a person needs a lot more confidence, so to speak, in their abilities, not necessarily humility, but we explain that because this is the wisdom of Hashem, that's what we are. That's what we're absorbing when we learn Torah. It is very different to other types of wisdoms. It's not the same as a mathematical concept or a scientific concept. Torah is Hashem's wisdom. And in order for us to be able to absorb Hashem's wisdom, the most important thing is for us to feel a tremendous humility, a sense of that Hashem is in control, Hashem is the one who we're dependent on, and in truth, we are not very much. And why is that? Because no matter how intelligent we might be, no matter how brilliant a person is, their intellect is limited. And Torah is the unlimited. It is the godly wisdom. So a human mind cannot absorb God's wisdom unless they have this humility. And when you have the humility, then you are making space to be able to absorb the wisdom of Hashem. And that's why we're asking that Hashem should open our hearts, because what we want is, we want to be able to actually understand, like not even understand, but to feel the gift, the gift of Torah, that it is Hashem's wisdom and that He is allowing us to unite with Him through learning His Torah. So that's why this is all like the prerequisite for that. Let me see. Oh, and just a very cute, and also it actually says that what happens is sometimes, you know, a person can learn and a person can daven and a person can do many good things, but especially with learning, there's a great tzaddik who said that sometimes, he heard it from the Rebbe of Kotsk, he said, it says in the Shema, we say, v'samtem es dvarai eile al levavchem, right, that you should place these words on your heart. So the question he asks is, what does it mean to place them on our heart? We don't want them on our heart. We obviously want them in our heart. What does it mean on our heart? So he says like this, that sometimes and many times when we're learning, when we're davening, our hearts is not open and it doesn't go in. We don't feel that we're really absorbing. But what we ask for is, it's okay, Hashem, leave them on the heart. And then there will be certain times when you will psach libi, you will open our hearts, and everything that's laying there will fall in. And that's why sometimes it's very interesting. Sometimes we could be learning for many days, we could be davening for many days, and we don't feel anything. And then all of a sudden, for some reason, one mincha or whatever it may be, even sometimes it might be a mitzvah that we do, all of a sudden we have this incredible inspiration, seemingly out of nowhere. It is really an accumulation of all those tefillahs that we've done that didn't enter our heart initially. But now, as we ask Hashem, psach libi, He opens up the heart, and it all comes in. And we feel this incredible inspiration, this incredible jump. So it's an accumulation, and that's what we ask Hashem. So we ask Hashem that truthfully we want our heart to always be open. Sometimes it's not. Please open it so that we can absorb all that we are learning, and that it should actually be internalized. Okay. And obviously we understand also that when we talk about Psach Libi B'Sar Esecha, open our heart in Torah, because you would think that we should say open our mind in Torah. Why are we saying open our heart? Because we know that Torah is a very different wisdom to other wisdoms. Not only is it godly wisdom, but the Torah wisdom is that the idea of Torah is that it should affect us, it should change us as a person. Torah is not meant to be an intellectual pursuit where we understand that it is, it's fascinating and it's phenomenal, and it can, and if somebody is very, very bright, there are certain parts of Torah that really can give you tremendous pleasure. It's an exercise in the mind. But nevertheless, Torah, the purpose of Torah is not that. The purpose of Torah is to change us as people. And that's why we say, Psach libi b'sayr asecha. We want and we know that Hashem has to help us with this. That the Torah should be absorbed, that we are actually different people after we learn Torah. That it should be able to change us, it should actually affect our actions. And then we ask, v'achrei mitzvay secha, tirdaif nafshi. That what should we do? We should run with excitement to do your mitzvahs. When we do a mitzvah, if we do it with enthusiasm, if we do it because you really want to, you run. That shows excitement, is when you're running towards something. And that's what we're asking. And actually, interesting, it says that when we're asking, we're saying, v'acharei mitzvay secha, why is it in the plural? Because sometimes when you do a mitzvah, like, you know, you see if somebody does a mitzvah for the first time, it's extremely exciting. Second time, okay. Third time, after a while, loses that excitement. So here we're asking Hashem that He should keep on inspiring us, that when we do mitzvahs, we should do them with constant excitement. Whether they be the 1,000th time, the 100,000th time that we're doing the mitzvah, we should constantly feel a new excitement and run to the opportunity to do a mitzvah. So we should have a new enthusiasm every time. And like I said, we should consistently yearn to be able to do more and more and more mitzvahs. And as we say, that's the idea of a mitzvah, geireres mitzvah, one mitzvah leads to another mitzvah. The more you're inspired, so to speak, what it should do, and what we're asking Hashem, is not that we should get bored of it, but rather it should give us a deeper awareness, a deeper sense of closeness to Hashem, that we should want to do even more mitzvahs. And not only that, but it should affect our neshama forever, right? It should, so we say also, that's another very beautiful way, not only that we should chase the opportunity to do a mitzvah, but the mitzvah should chase us. After we've done the mitzvah, we ask Hashem that the mitzvah should, so to speak, be behind us, which means it should attach itself to us, and that our whole self now has changed. We are a different person than before we did the mitzvah. So we're more refined, we're more holy, we're closer to Hashem. Then we say, just seeing the words inside, V'chol ha'choshvim alay ra, right? Anybody who thinks bad of us, Meheira hafer atzasom v'kalkal machshavtam. So what should Hashem do? He should hasten to annul their counsel and frustrate their design. So interesting, it sounds almost like we're worried about what other people are thinking about us. So there's one way to explain it, that it's nothing to do with other people's thoughts. We're actually asking Hashem to get rid of our negative thoughts. Sometimes we have thoughts that we might say are not our own. In other words, they're not coming from the godly soul. They're coming from the Yetzer Hara. So we ask Hashem, all that think badly about us, which means all these negative thoughts and all these thoughts of doing things that are wrong and all these thoughts that schlep us down and all the depressing thoughts and all the anxious thoughts, Hashem, help us get rid of them. They are negative and they're not ours. They belong to the Yetzer Hara. So here we're asking for assistance, that it should be, that Hashem should get rid of it, and it should definitely not be able to be implemented, so to speak, that we shouldn't allow it to affect us in a real way, in a tangible way, that we shouldn't carry it with us, and it shouldn't affect our way of thinking. Okay, and then also interesting, it says like this, that the truth is that as you know, as people who try to do the right thing and do good things as Jews, so unfortunately, the way the world is, until Mashiach comes, there's opposition, right? There's the negative side. So wherever we're, like, some, if we're being good, then there's opposition. So we ask Hashem to eradicate the opposition, that anything that opposes, that puts blockages, that makes it difficult for us to serve Hashem or to do good things in the world, Hashem should remove that and even remove their ability to think about it and to plan it, and it shouldn't ever have any power over us. As we say, And then, now, so each Siddur has it a little bit differently. There's a pasuk here that comes in the Nusach Ari, and then the Nusach Ashkenaz has it after. So I'll just show you. In the Nusach Ashkenaz, now you go straight to Asei Leman. Do you see where it says, Asei Leman Shemecha, Asei Leman Yeminecha, Asei Leman Kedusha Secha, Asei Leman Teira Secha, which is for Asei Leman. Asei Leman means do for the sake, right? So we're asking Hashem, in the art scroll, I'll just read you, it says, act for your name's sake, act for your right hand's sake, act for your sanctity's sake, and act for your Torah's sake. We have it in a different order, and we also have another pasuk before that. We'll get to that pasuk in a minute that comes in the art scroll after, but I just want to tell you what this means is we're asking Hashem for so many things. Throughout the whole Shemayna Esrei, we're asking Hashem, and in this paragraph specifically, we're asking Hashem for assistance to serve Him, right? To be humble, to feel Him, to feel His presence, to want to learn Torah, to be able to learn Torah, to be able to do mitzvahs, to get rid of all the negative thoughts. Now we say, do it for your sake. Don't do it for our sake. Do it for your sake. Because when a Jew is able to serve Hashem, that is the biggest Kiddush Hashem possible. And when a Jew doesn't serve Hashem, as we know, it's a tremendous Chilul Hashem. You know, we know that when whatever we do, we're always scrutinized extra. So if a person, just an average person on the street does something wrong, well, people say, oh, well, they've done something wrong, they're not a good person, but they don't take it further. But we, for some reason, and this is part of being who we are, we have a much greater responsibility, because on top of saying, oh, this is not a good person, then they start to say, well, all Jews are bad, and that's, you know, the God of Israel is bad, so to speak. So we carry this extra weight of Kiddush Hashem upon us, and that's why we ask Hashem, we say, do it for your name, that there shouldn't be a Chilul Hashem for your sake. In Galus, Hashem is hidden, right? But we want to be able to connect to you even though you are hidden. And that's why we're saying to Hashem, do it for your sake, because now it's so hard. It's hard for us because you're not obvious and you're not revealed. And there are blockages that seem to come in our way. So we ask that for your sake, you should provide us with the ability to do all of the things that we are asking for. And then, let me just see. Oh, and also for your sake, for your Shemecha, could also be referred to our Neshama. Have compassion on us, because of our neshama. So it's like the idea that our neshama is in our body, similar to, like, almost, unfortunately, sometimes, like a prisoner who is being held captive by our body. And our body is ruling the show and wants to do certain things that is not compatible with what the neshama would want. So we ask Hashem to give us strength. Asei leman shmecha. Shmecha is your name. But who carries your name? Our godly soul. Do it for the sake of our godly soul. Make it easier for us to be humble and to be open to your Torah so that our godly soul can actually do what it needs to do in this world. That's why we say, Asei Leman Shemecha. What is Asei Leman Yeminecha? What is the right side? So we know the right side is Chesed, the kindness, and love. That's on the right side. So we ask Hashem that He should do it because of His kindness, because of His love. But even more than that, very, very beautiful thing. We say that we want to be able to express our kindness and our love. So please take away anything that seems to stop us, that seems to put blockages from us exercising our chesed and our ava. That's what the Yetzer Hara does. He schleps it down. And what the Yetzer Hara does is he sometimes actually takes our love, and instead of us loving the right things, he makes us love the wrong things. So here we ask Hashem that sometimes our love is being captured by the Yetzer Hara. Asei leman yeminecha. Do it for the sake of the love, the capacity of love that you have given us, that we should be able to direct and channel it the way it's meant to be, because it's such a beautiful gift that we have the ability to love. So allow us and let us love the right things. And then Asei leman teresecha, we know that when Mashiach, what we're really asking for over here is that you should do it for the sake of your Torah, that what should you do? You should allow the world, actually, that Mashiach should come. When Mashiach will come, the world will be filled with the knowledge of Hashem. And everybody, what will they be doing? As the Rambam says, they will be involved in learning and experiencing as much Torah, as much godliness as possible. So we ask Hashem, Asei leman teresecha, do all of this so that your Torah can actually shine through. In other words, as we said before, if a person will watch their tongue and a person will not act deceitfully and not lie and learn Torah and do mitzvahs and do all the good things that they're meant to do, that for sure will ensure that Mashiach will come. And at that time, the Torah will be able to be learned the way it is in its depth. Right, so that's what we say. Now in the darkness of Golus, we can't understand Torah properly. It's impossible. So do it for the sake of your Torah. That's what we're asking. And also we ask Hashem that when we learn Torah, this is another interesting thing, Asei leman Torah secha, that when we learn Torah, we should learn Torah for the right reasons. Sometimes a person can learn Torah for the wrong reasons, whether it be because to gain them, I don't know, praise or whatever it may be, or they learn Torah with the wrong perspective. If you learn Torah with the wrong perspective, you find many, many questions, many things that might unsettle you, and then you start to struggle inside. So we ask Hashem, Asei leman Torah secha, that we should be able to absorb your Torah in a very pure way, in a way that we accept it as God's Torah. So even if things don't sit 100% with us, we know it's Hashem's Torah, and therefore we don't struggle with it. We look for answers, maybe. We learn other things, whatever it may be. But it's your Torah, Torah Secha. We identify it as Hashem's Torah. And also, what we also have to remember, and this is a very, very beautiful, oh my gosh, time goes so fast. Oh, Yvay. Okay, anyways, and there's one, I just share one more thing of this one, and it says like this, Hashem is, when we learn Torah, there's such a beautiful thing that's described in Shulchan Aruch, actually, that we should realize that Hashem is actually sitting and learning with us. When we learn Torah, it's like we have a chavrusa. And who is our chavrusa? Hashem himself. He repeats the words that we are saying as long as we're learning for the right sake, for the right reason. So I say leman Torah secha, do it for the sake of your Torah, because every time we learn Torah, you learn Torah with us. And as we say, we're asking for Hashem to bring Mashiach and Kedusha Secha, obviously, also. See, these are four things that we're asking Hashem. And when we have these four things, it says you have everything, that Hashem should help us, protect us, to retain our holiness. Because we know that the world is not a very holy place. We ask Hashem to allow us, not only to allow us, but to imbue us with that sense of what is holy and what is not, what is sacred and what is not, that we should have that sensitivity, and that we should be able to live a life of holiness connected to Hashem. I'm just going to read this. There's a lot more, but just one more point. L'man yecholtzu yedidecha, right? A friend. Interesting how it says that the friend should support you. Do you see the word yedidecha? Yedidecha is made up of two words, of two yad. Yad, yad. This is just a very cute thing. What is a friend? A friend is somebody who holds your hand, who's there for you, yad, yad. You hold each other's hand. But I feel bad. We haven't finished. I think what we'll do is when we start our series again, which we'll decide what we'll do it on, I will finish. But I just want to share something very, very important, that there is a very important thing that some people are not aware of. And I'm not going to be able to go at length, but I just want to tell you about it. There is now, just at the end of this paragraph, you see we're going to say again, that same line, yiyu l'ratza in imreifi, right? That it should be, may the words of my mouth and the thoughts of my heart be before you, acceptable before you, right? Hashem is my strength and my redeemer. We discussed that last week. This is the second time we're saying that pasuk, yiyu l'ratza. There is a very important custom that before we say these words, a person, and this you have to research for yourself, and some people have a siddur and they write it in, has to say a specific pasuk that they add. What is this pasuk? This pasuk is connected to your name. Now, what do I mean practically? I mean like this. If you open up, I wrote down the number of the pages. Let me see if I could find where I wrote it. In the Art Scroll Siddur and in the Blue Ari, there's a list of everybody's Hebrew name starts with a certain letter and ends with a certain letter. So you have a pasuk in the Torah which actually corresponds to your name. In the Ari, it's page 582, and in the Art Scroll, it's page 924. We all have to find our, what we call our pasuk. So I'll give you an example. If somebody's name is, the easy one is Michal. My husband's name is Michal, right? Mem starts with a mem, ends with a lamid. So his pasuk is Mi, I think Micha Meicha, Bakelim, Hashem Micha Moicha. No. Oy, I forgot what his pasuk is. I know his pasuk. Sorry. I'm sorry for being... Okay, you know, let me look it up. I'll tell you now. I'll just give you an example. I'll open up the page myself. There's my pasuk. My name is Dina, and my pasuk is Dai Gabalev Ish Yaschena. V'davar Tayv Yisamchena, which means it starts with a Dalit and ends with a Hey. Because my name is Dina, starts with a Dalit, ends with a Hey. So you have to find your pasuk, the letter starts, or some people have a thing where they say a pasuk that actually has their name in it, whichever one it is. You have to decide what your pasuk is, and at this point in the Shemayna Esrei, you insert the pasuk. There's many Kabbalistic things that, I don't have time today, it's its own shir, where this comes from, this custom, but it is a custom, but it is written, it is documented by very, very great people. It is a custom which has been accepted by everybody. And apparently, when you pass away, you will be asked your name. And if we say our name this way, in other words, if we say the pasuk that corresponds to our name, it will ensure that we will remember our name. Whatever that means, we will remember our name, and it will save us, it says, from terrible punishments of chibut hakever. These are all different things. And then there's another thing that a great tzaddik explains also, that every night when we go to sleep and our neshama goes up on high, you know, there's a certain part of our neshama that goes up on high. Everybody who says their pasuk with their name, this accomplishes a certain purification for the neshama, and it allows our neshama to stand at the chambers and actually peek inside where people are, where the neshamas who have passed away already are learning Torah. So it's a purification, whatever it may be, but it's a very important thing. So look up your pasuk. As I say, it's in the Siddur. And if you have a problem, you can call me or call somebody and ask to find it. It's an extremely important thing, and we insert it here. We insert it whenever we daven Shemayna Esrei. It's a very important part of the, yeah.